right, staff, are we ready to get started? We're good back there. Okay, then we're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Planning Commission meeting of the City of South Jordan. Today is Tuesday, September 24th, 2024. We have five of our six commissioners here. Mr. Wimmer sent a note this morning that he could be late due to a family matter. In addition to the commission, we've got members of city staff present this evening to help us with presenting the information that they've gathered on the items that we'll discuss this evening. And then we'd also like to extend a welcome to those who have joined us from the community, both as applicants and private citizens. We welcome you and appreciate your participation in our proceedings. So our first item of business this evening is to approve our agenda as published. Commissioners, I assume you've had a chance to review. Do I have a motion?
I'll motion that we approve the agenda as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Bivens. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Our next item is to approve our minutes. Okay. Do we approve training meeting minutes? I'm sorry that I didn't notice this before. Ms.
Yes, because it's in a
Crookston?
public meeting.
Okay. All right.
Yes, because it was, even though it was separate, we still do the minutes because that's what tracks your guys' training. And for the public record, it should have been a part of that public meeting.
Great. Thank you.
Just one question from our meeting last week combined with City Council. Will we then see minutes, or because that's a City Council, will they approve those minutes for us to get the tracking for the hours?
Yes, so City Council will approve those minutes for that training.
Okay, great.
But your time there will be tracked for your 4 hours required by state law. We'll make sure that's all included.
That's what I was getting to, all I cared about, so.
Yeah, I can tell. Track the time.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes and the Planning Commission training meeting minutes from the August 27th, 2024 meeting as published.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion on that? Okay, I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, I forgot to recognize Mr. Lewis, who's joined us this evening. He runs our city. Welcome. Staff, business for us this evening?
I don't have any new business for you.
Okay, that's easy. Planning Commission, Mr. Bishop.
Yeah, I've got a question for staff after this meeting. I think in our other business near the end, just as I was been reviewing our training, just have some follow-up questions. But I don't, it doesn't involve the those that are here for the
Okay.
other business.
Then I think that would be a great time to bring it up at the end. Mr. Gedge?
Yeah, just I will be absent from the second meeting in October. So just giving a two meeting warning notice to
Sounds
make sure
great.
there's a quorum.
Okay, I believe that's fall break and that sometimes that's an issue. So, commissioners, please check your schedules and we can talk next meeting. All right, any other business? Great. Okay, then we're going to jump right in. We have one legislative item this evening and one administrative item. Just as a note to all of those that have joined us this evening, we will have members of city staff present the information that they've put together in our packets. We'll have an opportunity to ask them questions. We'll potentially ask the applicant questions if they are present this evening. And then for each item, we'll have an opportunity for the public to address the commission if they've brought evidence or information that they would like to share with us to help us make our decision. We'll ask that you state your name and where you reside for our records once you've reached the podium, and then you'll be allowed 3 minutes to address the commission. And with that, I believe Miguel has.
Hold on. I gotta do mine.
Oh. So Miguel will be doing our staff reports, but Commissioner Bivens is actually asked to have a moment to address the commission before we start our business.
Yeah, so most of you know I work in this arena. I don't normally work within the city bounds for this exact reason, but I am actively involved in this item tonight, both items, and I have been financially compensated. So with that, I am going to recuse myself from both items, and we'll come back up if invited at the end.
Okay, do we need a motion to let? Okay, sounds great. Thank you, Commissioner Bivens. All right, so our first item this evening under. I'm so sorry, these are out of order, and I don't know why I didn't notice
I
this.
think they did that because the legislative piece is first, because if it doesn't get a recommendation or passed by City Council, then the administrative would not be applicable. And correct. So maybe that's why they switched up.
Right. Okay. If you don't recommend the rezoning, then there's no reason to go forward with the subdivision part of it. So that would be unless the council, you know, overturned you and decided to approve it, then it would come back for your approval.
Well, it's unusual.
Because we can't approve a subdivision without necessarily the council. I mean, you can approve the subdivision, but it'd be when you do it, if you recommend in favor of the rezone, I believe we're asking you to also then, when you review the subdivision, is to put the one stipulation as only, you know, you approve it, but it's subject to city council approval of the overlay zone.
Okay. With that then, this first item that we're hearing is under legislative. That means that we are a recommending body. Our decision this evening will not be final. This will be an item that will make a recommendation to city council, who is an elected body, and they will make the final decision on this first item. So with that, Miguel has our staff report for item H1, the Whedon Acres, lots 14 and 15, flag lot overlay rezone.
Thank you, commissioners. So this is the Whedon Acres lots 14 and 15A flag lot overlay presentation. So it's a rezone and subdivision, two applications. So these are the two properties in question found in the Whedon Acres subdivision. They're both combined 1.9 acres and they are zoned R1.8 single family residential. And with the overlay, the underlying zone will remain the same, but there will be an overlay for the allowance of flag lots on the two properties. So this is actually the first time this flag lot overlay zone has been brought before you. So the ordinance was passed back in 2020, and the purpose of the flag lot overlay zone is to allow for the creation of a flag lot in an existing subdivision that does not meet the minimum requirements of Title 16, essentially. That minimum requirement is that the lot in question has to be twice the size of the average lot size in the subdivision. The two lots in question are not twice the size of the average lot size in the Whedon Acres subdivision, so that's why the flag lot overlay zone could then apply. For the flag lot overlay zone, a development agreement is required to have predictability as to how the lots will develop. The subject lot frontage, in order to qualify for the overlay rezone, the lot in question has to have a frontage of 125 feet minimum along the public right-of-way. Using this overlay zone, the lot's underlying zone does not change. It will remain single-family residential R1.8. So the lot size and the density has to meet that R1.8 requirement, and it will have to develop along the standards of that zone. Setbacks, all the other requirements will have to be met, unless there are adjustments in the development agreement, which there is a couple in this case. So this is the proposed plat that I will go into a little bit more detail in the second report, but essentially, what they will look like is this. So the two front lots are not highlighted, but they are 101 and 102 along 3010 West. And then there's gonna be a connection from 3010 West into the back to the two flag lots highlighted in green and purple. Those two are 103 and 104. This is just highlighting the emergency services, emergency turnaround, the fire truck turnaround. And this part is highlighting what you may have seen in the development agreement, that one fencing adjustment made. So typically with the R1.8 zone and the lot sizes exceeding 0.5 over half an acre, they are allowed to have animal rights, so farm animals, but with this situation, the two front lots do not meet the farm animal floating zone, so they are not allowed to have farm animals in the two front, but the two back ones would. So essentially, under the code, masonry walls would have to be installed between the property lines of the two front lots and the flag lots. The property owner decided or asked that the city does not make that a requirement, that they have regular fencing installed. And in exchange, the city has agreed that regular fencing will be required here, not masonry fencing, but no farm animals are allowed on any of the properties in the amended subdivision. So essentially, no masonry walls should be installed, but farm animal rights are restricted. And if they want to amend that in the future, they can through a subdivision amendment. So just to recap a couple of the things, all of the lots created in the subdivision amendment will remain single-family residential. The alteration is mainly with the fencing requirement. All the other developments happening here will have to comply with the R1.8 zone. And the concept provided to you kind of shows what the houses could look like here in the future to the two flag lots. And with that, I move that the Planning Commission recommend that the City Council approve the following. So the resolution R2024-42 approving the Wheaton Acres Subdivision Amendment Flaglot Overlay Development Agreement, which was provided to you, and also Ordinance Number 2024-08-C approving the zone change from single family residential R1.8 to R1.8 with the Flaglot Overlay Zone for lots 14 and 15A of the Wheaton Acres Subdivision.
Thank you, Miguel. A couple of questions. What is the minimum lot size in the 1.8 zone?
So it's 14,520 square feet, which is about 0.335 acres.
So these front lots are just making that?
Correct.
Okay. And then how does it change the overall density of the entire development? I always ask this question because how many more properties can do this before you cut off the ability to because you've reached saturation?
So Wheaton Acres as of right now has 26. Yeah, it should have. Or 53 lots. Sorry, let me redo that calculation. Sorry, not 26. So Wheaton Acres has 53 lots currently in the subdivision with a gross acreage of 34.27 acres. So the density right now is about 1.54. So with the addition of two extra lots, the density would be 1.6.
No, I think you've invert your number. Wouldn't it be units? Oh wait, no, you said
lots.
No.
Over acreage, right, Greg? Yeah, so I did the total number of lots in the subdivision divided by the total.
Okay, that's how many. Okay, units per lot.
Yeah, so that's the density, but also with the subdivision, itself, it is also within the density requirement with the addition of two extra lots.
So now how many more lots can be subdivided before they've saturated what they can do as far as overall density for the entire subdivision?
I don't have that calculation off the top.
I think I just need to take the overall acreage of the Wheaton Acres subdivision is how big, did you say?
Times it by 1.8 and
subtract it
from
the total acreage is 34.27 according to
and multiply that by 1.8 and that'll tell you how many lots that they'd be allowed.
Okay. So this takes up to 55.
61.
How much?
61.
So that would mean they can have
So that means
about six more lots because this would be eight more than now. But there's two right here. So.
And can you tell from this map how many of these properties would qualify for a flag lot overlay?
It's hard to say just looking at it because they do have to meet that frontage of 125 for the overlay zone. I can't tell exactly how many of these ones would meet that. These two in question do, but it's hard to say for all of the other ones exactly.
Okay.
If you look follow up on that 125 feet, that's per lot. So for these two, it'd have to be 250 feet, correct?
Yeah, that 125 is.
And what's the total for these two lots?
Per lot.
Is it 250 or more?
So each lot has approximately 140 feet of frontage in the two lots in question here.
Okay.
So you address the animal rights issues within these lots. What about the fencing requirements for the lots adjacent?
Right, so that fencing requirement still remains the same for the lots adjacent, and it's been discussed with the applicant and property owner. So let's see here, where is that? So the fencing in blue around here can remain normal fencing because the surrounding properties also qualify for animal rights. They are over an acre and are also in the over half an acre and are in the R1.8 zone. So they don't have to be required to have masonry walls here. But the masonry walls aren't to be required between the two back and the two front lots. They also understand that the fencing really only applies to the lots in question within the agreement. So that adjustment change, the change to the regular fencing only applies to the amended four lots.
So even though all properties are giving up their animal rights, you won't require the masonry wall between the adjacent properties in these back lots?
That's true. There's not. They're giving up their animal rights, but that doesn't mean, that would mean they still don't have to put up a fence there because they could have, I mean, they could have animals, but they're not going to have any. Usually you put up the fence to protect the smaller lots from the, you know, and protect the animal rights of other people.
Okay.
And because they can't have any, it doesn't mean that they have to put up a fence. And the smaller lots, they can't have any, and so I'm not sure. Miguel, do those smaller lots have to put up any type of masonry wall between them and their properties to the north and south?
So I think the applicant did mention that there was a wall currently on the south side for lot, or what's going to be lot 102, but that will also have to be a requirement for lot 101. If there isn't already a masonry wall there.
And those masonry walls they have to stop 30 feet back of the road because you can't have that. Nobody could have their animals in the front yard anyway. So that's what we usually do is have them put up the masonry wall to fence it to a certain point, and that would protect the animal rights of the two properties to the north or south.
Commissioners, questions?
Yeah, going back to the animal overlay district, is that new? Because in April and May, we considered a somewhat similar rezone, but animal rights were a discussion where in R1.8 or R2.5, it would not be allowed even if they had more than half an acre. So this new animal overlay zone is brand new from what I'm hearing, or I've never been brought up before. And I guess, when did that come into effect, and how many properties in South Jordan currently have that? Just for future similar applications we may see.
So it looks like the farm animal floating zone was adopted in 2012, according to our municipal code. And that applies to the agricultural lots and to the single-family residential R1.8 lots that are over half an acre. So it's been around for
And so just years. An applicant who might have R1A could apply for just that floating zone through a rezone if they had the other, you know, minimum size requirements to maintain property or animal rights, if it's not currently an overlay zone, correct? Just for future applications or
No, I don't situations. Believe a property owner has to apply for a rezone to get the farm animal floating zone, as long as they meet the size and zoning, correct, Greg?
Yeah, there's no requirement to apply for to have large animals if you meet the requirements of the zone, which means requirements of the code, which means either R1.8, A1, or A5 with a lot size of a half acre or more. That they can have animals. If they have no other zone is allowed to have animals, regardless of the size of the property, and at this time, also any property that is less than a half an acre in those three zones, they're not allowed to have animals as well. And I don't think there's any way they can apply to for an overlay zone that would allow them that.
I think that clears up a lot of the issues from the spring.
One thing to remember is when that zone was passed, it was applied to, it was overlaid on those zones, R1A and the agricultural. So an individual doesn't need to apply, it was applied then.
Okay.
That's why they don't have to come back every time. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Thank you.
Are we creating a confusing situation then where somebody might buy one of these lots in the future and read our code and say, wonderful, I can have animal rights? How will we in the future ensure that property owners know that these are not eligible for animal rights anymore because of the agreement that's happening today? Or is that a question for Miguel? Sorry, I was...
I don't think either one of us have the answer for that. Sorry, I mean, it's not something that we keep track of who owns the properties.
Is that something that would be in the development agreement?
It's in the development agreement.
And so that would be how...
That would be there, but it's like...
The development agreement's recorded against...
And it's recorded.
So they get it in a... And when they bought the house, it would be in there. If they want in all their documents.
If they read all the documents in their title, you know, title search, they'll find that.
And then do they become the... Does somehow that development agreement transfer to the new owner so that if they want to amend it?
It runs with the property, so...
So there's a mechanism that would happen, and they are now the party of the
property. If they wanted to change that, they could file for an application to amend the development agreement, and then we would mainly probably require them to put up the masonry walls that weren't put up in the first place. So
the point of the development agreement is lock all the parties in. That's why it's recorded against the land. So just like with a really big development that's got all their rules a little bit different than what you just read in the code, this does too. Many properties in South Jordan, like all the ones in Daybreak, have rules that are in development agreement that are recorded, and they can go see them that they may not see if you read the PC zone. Mm-hmm. It's really not that expansive. So this is a very common thing.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Sorry, a couple more. Just on the calculation of the acreage, especially where the 101 and 102 are going to be right at the minimum 14,500 square feet, third of an acre, is the calculation including the new flag roads included into that, and does that subtract from that calculation, or is that can be included without any issue?
So I think you're talking about the flagpoles?
The flagpoles, the potential roads. With that square footage, does that decrease from the minimum amount required for a lot?
Yeah, so the flagpole is part of the property boundaries of the flag lot. So in this case, this one is 20 feet wide, but each one gets 10 feet, a total combination of 10 feet, 20 feet connection to 3010 West. So the flagpole in green belongs to the lot 103. The flagpole in purple is part of the property of lot 104.
Okay. Couple more, sorry. I don't think I saw it, and maybe Jeremy might have the answer on this one, and this might be more for the next application legislative, I'm not sure, but it might be rezoned. Are there any issues with water rights, ditches, just because they are larger properties today that currently have agricultural rights? Are there any water issues, and if there are, or water, not issues, but water, if there are, would that be an issue if we did rezone this to two additional lots from four to two from four, sorry, to four from two?
I'm not aware of any water rights issues, but that would be a private issue.
Okay.
The ditch and everything is privately owned, and so the city would only be notified if a resident brought it up.
Okay, and sorry, my last question, just because of our favorite topic lately, ADUs. Just because this is a R1.8 zone, but the change would be with this overlay for a flag lot, they would still, in the future, under a separate application, all four lots would be able to apply for an ADU, which would make not just two homes to four, but two homes to potentially eight with these lots.
Absolutely the same, right. And so actually, because our zoning code would allow for all four of those lots to have an ADU, a detached ADU, and also by four, all of them to have, and including everybody else in the neighborhood could have one. as well. And then also they could have a basement one instead of a detached. I mean, so ADUs would be allowed on all those properties.
And those ADUs, to Commissioner Hollis, an additional question of density, do not factor into the overall density of the subdivision, correct?
No, they do not.
Miguel, you mentioned in your presentation that the zone overrides Title 16 requirements. Is it all requirements? Is it all or some? Or can you tell me more about that?
So the one requirement these two lots could not meet under Title 16 was that they're not twice the size of the average lot in the subdivision. And so because of that, they're not eligible to be subdivided into flag lots using Title 16. So
right.
That's why the flag lot overlay zone was created, to allow another mechanism for, in limited cases, for lots that do qualify to be subdivided into flag lots.
Okay, but it's just that, just the area requirement of Title 16. It's not other requirements of Title 16 under the lots and parcels
right.
section.
Right. They still have to meet the density and the lot size requirements for the zone and the requirements of the Title 16 that are mentioned in there.
Okay. So in 2018, about 6 years ago, they passed the section in lots and parcels around flag lots. And it talks about it's not the intention of that title to subdivide along a street. Did the city have any conversations around that? Because this is one of the comments we got from one of that you sent on to us before the meeting, talked about along the street, 3010 West, and this is there. So could you maybe talk about how I should, you know, how the city or how, what are some thoughts around that? Maybe I shouldn't say what thoughts. Is there anything? let me ask a specific question. Would you characterize that as subdividing a flag lot along the street, an established street? And could, given the testimony before, can others, like the three or four adjacent properties that look like they have the same frontage, also do the same?
Well, so, I mean, it does have a connection to 3010 West, which is a public right-of-way, so I'm not sure I really understand your question.
Okay.
Since flag lots do need to have a connection to...
Yeah, let me try this way.
Commissioner Gedge, were you on the council when we had the citizens come that wanted this change?
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, I think Commissioner Catmull, correct me if I'm wrong, his question is 3010 West considered one of the roads that is prohibited in what was a pass in 2018 and what can be connected to with frontage for a flag lot?
What it says, let me read this so that we can get this. It says, it is not the intent, this is 16.04.160, lots and parcels, and it's in D.
Can we have Miguel bring that up on the screen here?
Sure.
I know he's got the code pulled up.
You can bring that up. I'll start reading it.
Okay.
It is not the intent of this chapter to allow the proliferation of multiple flag lots along a given street within a subdivision. And then there's or change the zoning or character of a subdivision. So my question is, it looks like, and we don't have a definitive answer yet, but it looks like there are four or so properties along 3010 West that could become flag lots that might qualify. And would that, in your opinion, as a planner, I don't even know if you're the right person. So if someone from the city wants to override
perhaps
that.
Greg or somebody who was here at the time.
Be considered a proliferation of flag lots if we had four flag lots along 3010 West.
So can I say something? I remember the property that we discussed this change under. They were all very deep properties, and potentially you could divide all of them into three. And so the question was, if every property along this entire street is going to do this, instead of a flag lot out to this one existing street and essentially create a sub-street behind it, why not officially do it all at once, run an official street through the back of that property. And so I think that they were presented with a really specific piece and area of the city. And so with that in mind, said, we're trying to avoid doing this with every single property along a street. But then where I feel like our hands are a little tied with our training that we had a couple weeks ago, not with city council, but the previous one, is if it's allowed and they're meeting the requirements, we're really limited as far as our discretion, unless we can point to something that should be mitigated and we can't reasonably mitigate it. I see exactly where you're going, and I agree with you that if this is where we're heading, then is that what we're accomplishing?
I'm just trying to understand
right.
I'm trying to understand it, and I unfortunately wasn't able to get the minutes, access the minutes before the meeting so I could read the context. Mm-hmm. But there's an area of concern because of the recency. It's 4 of the 5 council members are still council members today. And so I didn't know exactly how to read that. So.
Well, and then I guess, and maybe Mr. Luce can chime in, but it says it is not the intent, but it doesn't, it says shall not. So I guess it's the legalese of what we, can we, does that override if the other pieces, I know this is a legislative action, but you know, the other aspects of things that we can either approve or deny off of, just the wording is not the intent, but it doesn't say shall not or will not, or you know, it's kind of the ambiguity of the language of the text.
Mr. Schindler, do you, or Mr. Luce?
I think the easy answer here, there's 2 easy answers. One easy answer is I hate intent language because it's not enforceable, as Commissioner Gedge just pointed out. Regardless, I think we're looking at the wrong thing. Is this flag or lot is coming in under Title 17, not 16. And so the 17 rezone is applying, not the 16 development code. If it was under 16, it'd be an administrative item, not rezoning it. So this is being considered under a rezone. So you're not applying administrative standards in 16, which is your development code, which you apply site plans and subdivisions and all that. You're applying this rezone idea in 17. And that's why they brought it under 17, not 16, because the 16 doesn't work for that. And the other reasons, as Mr. Aguilera specified earlier. So continuing to analyze it under 16 is just going to get you down a rabbit hole if it doesn't apply, which is why it wasn't applied for in the application. They're over here in 17 saying, let's rezone it to this other zone, which will allow it this way. So you don't have to worry about 16.
So why does 17 only mention the one requirement in 16 that releases it? And then it says, says unless such provisions are expressly waived or modified by the approved development agreement. That's around the zone, that's Title 17.
Yeah, so
I'm struggling to understand, like, one of the things that we have to do as a planning commission is we look at how it applies to all the cities and city ordinances, especially 16 and 17. And so I'm not clear how 17 overrides all of 16.
Because it's a different zone. So 16 applies in a zone that allows flag lots under that zone. 17 says, you can't get a 16 flag lot in whatever zone it is, the agricultural or 1-8. So 17 overlay says you can do it here under these rules. And so you apply those rules, but you can't apply them until by legislative discretion they're imposed on the property, which is the question you're being asked to answer tonight, is your recommendation whether 17 should be applied. The second part of this, which I think is, you'd have to approve conditionally, it's a little premature, but your next administrative one is applying then 17. If it is granted, then does it meet the code to apply it? So a lot of these questions are really more appropriate there under that rules, but you gotta get 17 applied first. You've gotta apply the zone first. So you're doing what you guys are great at, and you're looking at the rules and applying the rules. But remember, we're in 17. Should we invoke these rules or apply these rules on the property first? And then we see, once they are applied to the property, because right now that overlay zone is not applied in this property. That's why they're asking for the rezone.
But at 17, if it's rezoned and it has...
If it's rezoned, then... But if great question.
If it's rezoned, it is already a flag lot by its appearance.
Yep.
And in which case, it's hard to then... What happens there?
And then you apply those rules.
Let's say that 16 doesn't... The next administrative item doesn't pass.
Well, it really can't be considered except for, you know, waiting on the rezone. So I would just take this. Do you feel that the zone that allows flag lots should be applied to this area
part,
or not?
To that part.
That is your question. Your question isn't whether it meets a bunch of technical administrative items in the zone yet. Your question is whether or not you recommend to the City Council that they should apply this zone to this property in this area, as that's a legislative discretion item.
Okay.
It's a really confusing thing, I get it, especially where they're both in one meeting. Typically, you guys will recommend a rezone, and then months later, the subdivision will come back to you, right? If it's even approved by the council. But now they're both kind of sitting before you and muddles it, so that's something we'll watch for in the future. But you guys just have to say, do you think it fits? Does it work as a zoning thing? Put that zoning hat on, and it'll be a kind of easier question. You still have to get to the other questions, Commissioner. You do, but you don't have to get to them until after the zone's applied.
I liked his answer. It actually clarified a lot for me.
It's quite messy in the order of things, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Pretend that the subdivision questions come back to you in 3 months. Just set it aside for a second. Then it's a little bit different to look at. I know you want to get in 16 questions. That's what you guys are really good at. That you guys live there and you do administrative items all the time. But just put on that hat. Do you think that an overlay zone that allows flag lots should be allowed here or not?
Okay, so if I want to interpret 16, I don't say interpret, but if I'm reading 16.
You could point to it in your reasoning.
I could choose. I could choose to point to that in the subdivision, the next item, because I don't feel like it meets the city code or something like that.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? All right, at this time is a representative from Gordon Mylar Construction here this evening. Do you have anything you'd like to add to the staff report at this time? Commissioners, do we have questions for the applicant at this time?
Not for the reason.
Okay. All right. At this time, I'm going to open up the floor to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we would invite you to come to the podium and you may present the evidence that you've brought. I would like to make one note that we did receive a handwritten note, but it did not have a name attached to it. So do we have a way of knowing who that was? If not, I don't think we can enter it into the public record.
I don't know. It was just given to me, and the envelope also did not have a name or an address.
Okay.
So can we just make an announcement for anybody who might listen to this for other meetings? That if you would like to email or turn in public comment, it has to have the proper
name
and address, same as giving public testimony in a meeting.
Just
a name. Well,
anyway.
But yes, the preference off of last week's meeting, yes.
Yeah.
So is there anybody here this evening, please?
And again, this is just on the rezone piece.
Yep.
Yeah, technical questions would be on the next item.
My name is John Bess. I live in the area. I hope I'm asking the right questions. I'm the water master for that area, so I do have questions on the water. There is a return ditch down the back of what you guys are now calling a flag lot that needs to remain. I find that when someone new purchases lots, there are 8 water shares on those 2 lots. I would like to know where those water shares are going, who owns them, what lots they are assigned to, and that return ditch, because I find that when someone new that's never been around irrigation water moves in to our little subdivision, there's always these great big huge issues, and the people who own that, the new owners of that property, will argue with me that they do not have to maintain that little return ditch or the water because they don't have water. That's not true. They have to. But that always becomes sticky, and I try not to cause problems over there. I try to be friends with everybody, but it becomes a real issue. So I do need to, we do need to make a stipulation where that water goes, who owns them, what lots they're assigned to, and that return ditch needs to remain there. The other question I have is, and I don't want to, I hope I don't put this question rude, up, and that's not what I'm trying to do, I'm just trying to get information. Mr. Mylar, when he told everybody what he was going to do with the lot, that's not exactly what's happening right here. So I would like to know what the four houses are. Are they, and I think we would all like to know that, is this four rental properties? Is this four houses that's going to be sold and be individual owners? We would just like to know what's going on with the four homes that are going to be built there. Are the front homes being torn down? That's all we'd like to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bess. Who else would like to address the commission? We would invite you to come forward at this time, please.
My name's Ivan Klotovich. I'm a resident of South Jordan for about 83 years. And my question is, I don't really care about the four lots. 3010 West is what I'm concerned about. Curb, gutter, and sidewalk, we don't want it. The breakaway fence stays up. That's what I'm interested in. If somebody wants to subdivide their lots, so be it. But the majority of us want that road. No curb and gutter, no sidewalk. That's all I've got to say.
Thank you. Mr. Klovich, please.
My name's Elizabeth Olszewski. I've lived not far from these homes, been here about 20 years. A couple of issues I have is the water, as John talked about. I am a water user. We had someone come in and has a rental property just south of me, and they do not maintain the ditch, and they claim they do not. But under the state Title 72, they are legally bound to. Now, I used to work for the Department of Transportation with the Right-of-Way Division, and if you're familiar with water and water rights and easement, then you would understand what Title 72 is. Most people that move in don't have any understanding of what that means or what their responsibility is. It's like a curb and gutter. You're expected to take care of your park strip. I grew up by Liberty Park most of my youth. If you have a park strip, you maintain it. It's no different out here. So that is a bit of a concern for me. The other concern I have is in changing that property to four different homes and people start doing that, there's a lot of children in our neighborhood. It creates an increase of car. People already drive down there pretty fast. We have small children in our neighborhood. They are not always watched. We've had some that have come close to being hit. It is a bit of a concern. I love having the breakaway fence, and I love that 3010 does not have curb and gutter. So most of us have ditches in the front of our property. It's a problem if you try to instill curb and gutter, because then it's like, well, how am I getting water to my property? What are you maintaining? What are you or not? So I would like to hear what those two items that get addressed. I would prefer not to have each subdivision, which is beyond our control, divided and subdivided, because that means it's going to increase. It's going to get really messy when it comes to people coming in and out and parking. And so those are my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Short. My name is Dale Sant. My husband and I live at 10500 South, 3010 West. So we're across the street from this property, across to the west, and just slightly north. It really caught my attention when it was brought up that these might be able to be subdivided into 8 properties now? I mean, what we understood was this would be the 4, the regular and the plague properties and lots, and that they were planning maybe to build just one house in the back or something like that. Not a great huge change in population. But that's very scary to think that that many more people would be there, again, with all the extra traffic. That's not a real wide street. Parking is a problem, or would be anyway. There are several of us neighbors who are quite opposed to even having the subdivision done, because we weren't aware that there was a change made in 2020 that subdivisions could be made. I'm not sure why that wasn't brought up to the individuals who lived there, but that was always our understanding when we signed our contract to live there 38 years ago, that there could be no subdividing of our acre or half acre lots. We have an acre lot. I'm just really concerned, and I hope that you will consider all of our feelings as well as what's best for the city and what's the income and all those sorts of things. I mean, there's lots of room to the west where people can move. We like to keep our little quiet street just as it is. That's why we moved there, was to have a nice quiet street to raise our children, now our grandchildren, and to have our horses and other animals that we kind of have one kind or another at some time. So we'd like to keep it the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sant. Is there anyone else who would like to address the commission? Do we have anybody online? We'll extend the same opportunity to those online if they will turn on their camera and audio. I would just need them to use the raise hand feature in Zoom. All right, I'm going to assume that there's not. As always though, Ms. Bowne and Mr. Jarman, you are welcome. All right, last opportunity. If you've joined us in person and you would like to address the commission, this is your time before I close the public comment. Okay, I'm gonna close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, we have a lot of questions that probably belong in the next item. That said, I did want to touch on a couple of them. The first was to clarify that this will not be a subdivision for 8 properties. By subdividing, we're creating, you're probably better at explaining this, different lots, and that would not be allowed in this case. Will you clarify that particular?
You mean the part about the ADUs? Mm-hmm. correct. This does not automatically create an ADU, but they will have the opportunity to have an ADU on each of these lots if they want one. And because they do meet the minimum size and they are in a zone that would allow it.
I'm thinking we probably have a lot of people here that may not be familiar with ADU. Would you mind?
The accessory dwelling units.
Yeah.
So accessory dwelling unit, what would it be? I don't know if it's likely or not likely, but it's open to any property owner in that subdivision if they wanted to do it. And these lots will be part of that subdivision, so that will be their option as well.
I just wanted to make sure I think we muddied the waters just a little bit, because that's on our minds. What's being subdivided here, the maximum number of subdivision lots that are being created is 2 going to 4.
It's just you're creating 2 more lots, period, is what you're doing.
Right.
And then technically an ADU doesn't necessarily mean it's now going to have its extra lots. It would just be other units that would be either in the home or an accessory one outside the home. They are limited in size and so forth. They also have to provide on-site parking and things. There's a lot of rules that we have about accessory dwelling units that just don't pop up. But it is a popular thing lately. We have a lot of applications throughout the city for those.
What this is, just I want to make sure it's really clear to everybody. A couple of years ago in the legislature, the state legislature said anybody who wants to have a mother-in-law apartment in their home, so let's just start with that, a mother-in-law in their home can do that. Now, we had some rules that would allow that before, but they said that applies statewide in the majority of any residential, primarily residential zone, and there's lots of details to that, but basically, in most places in South Jordan, if you want to have a mother-in-law apartment, an ADU, accessory dwelling unit, internal, you can have that by state code, and it's very clear that does not count as a different unit. Just like a few years ago, I had six people living in my house, three have moved out, heaven bless them, I hope they stay there. And if I moved another family into my basement of three people, the impact is about the same, right? It's six people, and my three older teenagers who are now adults were driving and had vehicles and stuff, so the impact on the neighborhood is the same, even though it is technically a separate family now. And that's the legislative policy thinking in this. So in an ADU mother-in-law. Now, on bigger lots in South Jordan, the South Jordan City Council has said it doesn't have to be an internal apartment. It could be a guest house. And there's lots of rules of size and stuff on it, but it can be a guest house. And so instead of the three moving into the basement apartment, now they move into a guest house, an above garage house or apartment or something like that in the back area of the house if the property's big enough. And that's what we're talking about here. So from a legal definitional standpoint, it is not doubling the density because an ADU is just simply a separate living area for some people. It doesn't even mean you're really increasing number of people, because I know some houses here in South Jordan, it's been a few years now, that have 10, 12 kids. So,
and that's the key other constraint, I think, that I don't think anyone's brought up, is the definition of a family dwelling is a formal definition in the code that involves blood.
Four or more unrelated people and that whole analysis.
And so there are even constraints there that you couldn't, for example, if you had your family, you couldn't have three other unrelated people in your internal dwelling, because I think it's only a family.
If it's a separate ADU, I could move three people into that, yes. But what I couldn't do is what I couldn't do is create like a house for to rent to college students and have eight college students all living in there. Right. But I can create a separate apartment, and then that apartment, a family can move there if they have three people, even though we're not related, that would meet. And that's what the intent of the ADU code statewide is that's applied to us.
But you couldn't move four there.
I could move four people into that or four into mine as long as they're two separate living units. That's what the living unit part of the ADU does from the state code. So you don't have to be related, and you can move 3, 4, 5 and 3, 4, 5 upstairs as long as you have, I mean, you shouldn't pack them all into one bedroom, right? If we're hoping people are moving, you know, on into big enough spaces. But from the standpoint, the four more unrelated is in the same living unit, Commissioner, not in a separate living unit. And that's what the separate living unit of an ADU creates. That's by state law.
I'll follow up after because
I
have some other questions around that.
Happy to talk to you about it.
Primary versus auxiliary and dwelling in and how those concepts all relate.
All right. I think the next one's for you, Jeremy. Can you talk to us a little about water, maintaining water, how that plays into our decision as well as what the city's responsibility is or is not?
Yeah, I'll do my best. And Ryan or anyone correct me, since it is private, it's not city utility. We don't manage it. So it's a private system. When the city's made aware of it, then we make sure the applicant is also aware of it so that they can convey that information onto their civil engineer. And then when they submit site plans and things, we make sure there's a ditch there. And if we know there's a ditch there, then we, you know, require letters from the ditch master just to make sure that the communication is there. But ultimately, it is a private system.
So not an item that would be included in a development agreement?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm not aware of anything we've done with ditches in a development agreement.
It's the same as any other utility. We wouldn't put Rocky Mountain Power's easement rights or Questar's easement rights or any other utility's easement rights. They enforce it, but we do note it, as Mr. Nielsen said, so that the civil engineer will call it out and deal with it, just like we do for all the other utilities. So it's, if you think about it as a utility, just like Rock Mountain, any electric, water, anything else running through somebody's property, that's how we treat it. So there, it's up to them to enforce it, but we do note it. We make sure everybody's aware of it once we're aware, and then they can deal with each other.
Okay, Jeremy.
We have no legal right to enforce their rights.
All right. Next one's for you too, Jeremy. I did notice in the development agreement, money being set aside, I assume, for the sidewalk, et cetera, the upgrading. Does that happen immediately as this property develops, or is that just being held in an account for when the entire street would potentially upgrade someday? What's the timing of that?
No timing. There's no timing on those improvements. It's just now at this time would be if the city were to set any money aside for future improvements, now would be the time to get those funds from the developer. Mm-hmm. And so the plan is to get those funds and then hold on to them until if there ever is a desire to do curb and gutter and sidewalk improvements along that frontage.
And then maybe this is for the next application. Sorry to muddy the, but would they be required if they were to develop two new buildings on the front lots, 101 and 102, would they be required to be up to the current standards, which would include curb and gutter for just those two lots, or could that be deferred for enforcement until, like you're saying, the rest of the neighborhood decides to upgrade or to include that?
My understanding is it can be deferred, and I think I'd have to double check the code, but I think that's up to the city engineer's discretion. To defer that and take cash in lieu of it so that it could be done in the future.
Mr. Gitch, did I get everything that's applicable to this?
I think just the one thing, 3010 West, what's the rating of the road?
Yes.
And with two additional homes, I'm assuming it would be able to handle that increased volume. But can you just confirm that or not confirm that?
There's about 18 to 20 homes on 3010 West, and so that's about 200 trips a day on the average. In the peak hour, that would be about one car every 3 minutes, every 2 to 3 minutes. So that would be, from city standards, that would be a level of service A. With two additional homes, it would probably still be within level of service A, but between A and B, but definitely still very, very quiet street.
Okay. Mr. Mylar, if you're willing to come up and share with the commission what your plans are for these properties, I think that might soothe some of your neighbors' concerns. I don't know that this is where we would make any requirements for impact or mitigation. That would be the next conversation probably, but if you're willing to come and share your plans for the property and what we saw in our staff report that you submitted a letter, that's what it was. I think that would be appropriate to share at this time.
Letter that came today, right?
Right.
Do I say my name?
Yes.
Daniel Mylar. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that letter you just referenced, mm-hmm. just because that was emailed, that will be included as part of the public record just because we received that today. Just wanted to get that confirmed.
Okay. So I bought these two properties. They're under two different LLCs, but I bought them both. End of last year, I hadn't really planned to, but they came available. And my family lives just on the other side of the Crash Gate in Bison Ridge. Really love the rural feel. My wife's always wanted it and just kind of said, hey, here's some land and maybe sometime we could potentially build a house for ourselves, have in mind kids. My wife's parents, Scott is here, and saying, hey, is there a way that we can kind of have a little setup where we have optionality of having places the kids could stay or visit or whatever. That was our intent. That's still our intent. I coincidentally am a builder, Gordon Myler Construction, and so I do development work, I do building, but this is very much a personal play for me with intents of trying to build a personal home there and do these things. I mean, foregoing the animal rights, if I was wearing a developer hat, I would absolutely put in the fences and retain those rights because it would make those large lots a lot more valuable. But that's against what we want for it. We want it to be beautiful. We want it to, not beautiful, we want it to feel rural and to feel open and to have those fences in between. It contradicts the whole feel of the street. And for the neighbor's information, like, I pushed very hard and was adamant that I also want the crash gate to remain. I want no curb gutter sidewalk. Like, the whole feel is what we love about it, and that's why we bought the property in the first place. And our intent is very much just to keep optionality that if one of our kids wants to eventually buy one of the, like, and build their own little house next to us, we'll see if they want to, but that could be an option as opposed to just trying to rely on ADU things and things they could have ownership of a lot. So that's how it came to be. That's how it is right now. But I hope I answered. I hope that's what you were looking for. That's all I can think to say on it. We very much value the rural feel and want to take good care of ditches and want to be good neighbors and maintain the look and feel of the neighborhood. So,
Commissioners, questions while we have Mr. Myler up here?
Okay, thanks.
Did you have a question? Okay. All right. Other things that we need answered by staff to make a recommendation on this item? Can we discuss what our thoughts are, just so the public can understand what goes into our decision? Mr. Bishop, should we start with you? Would you like to not go first? It's your call.
I'm the newest member of this commission. I prefer to not go first, if that's okay.
I'll go first, and maybe I'll take it all up, and you can just say ditto.
Thanks, sure. Mr. Gedge.
You know, I think the appropriateness of this, I mean, it's the same zone. It's still going to be R1.8. It's just we're adding a flag lot overlay. So from a zoning perspective, it's really not impacting more. It does allow the two additional units because we're allowing a flag lot. But there may be some other novel ways that they could get that in there, additional lots as well in the future, you know, roundabouts or whatever it might be. So I'm not too concerned about the actual rezone change just because of the one addition of the flag lot overlay for that. The bigger concerns I will have, I'm sure, is yourself and Commissioner Catmull and Commissioner Bishop might have, is going to be on the next phase of the application. And we all know my feelings about that. I'm just going to say that now, that our next administrative item should not be on tonight's agenda. I honestly don't know if City Council will approve this, so I think it's premature to be going down those steps, especially with some of the issues raised by maybe some of the residents here on the rezone first. Just, you know, because, you know, if it's not approved at the next level, and whatever that might be, I don't know if that's not on the next City Council agenda, and with the end of the year, it will even be heard in 2024. Just concerns that this feels a little rushed. And so for the actual rezone, I'm fine with it. But, yeah, I just don't like the way that they were both bundled together this evening.
Do you have a question you want to ask?
I would probably be on the next one. Would it be appropriate for us to table the administrative item once it comes up, just because of that? But I think on the rezone, just my feeling is that making a recommendation to the City Council, I'm in favor of forwarding a positive recommendation for this rezone with the addition of a flag lot overlay. That seems to be appropriate with what we discussed with the roads. All the other kind of technical issues are actually at the next phase of that. So, but for this particular item that we're reviewing tonight, I don't really have any questions on the rezone application.
Okay. Commissioner Catmull.
First of all, I want to apologize. I got a little animated at the earlier in the meeting, and that is usually not because I'm taking sides, one side or the other. It's just because I'm very rules focused, and my family can attest to that. So I'm sorry if someone took it that way. With the comments that we had earlier, really this is about whether we're trying to, whether it's appropriate, in my mind, it's whether it's appropriate and compatible with the zoning, with the Title 17 zone requirements, which is just to relieve the requirement about the square footage of the lot in the subdivision. And so it doesn't guarantee a flag lot will happen, but it opens up the possibility that they didn't have before. And so I would be supportive of the rezone for that purpose because it opens it up. And then whether there's an actual flag lot is a different story. So thank you.
Your concerns with Section 16 don't sway you one way or another?
Not for 17. I think Ryan, you know, Mr. Luce gave a really good, like, this is just about the possibility of being able to do that. It actually isn't the subdivision yet. Mm-hmm. And they can't, they couldn't build the units without the subdivision.
Right, but this is the only time you have any discretion. In the future, it'll be just did it meet the code?
Did it meet the subdivision code?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm...
With the rezone, they are allowed under Section 17, so is it meeting those requirements?
Yeah.
It's interesting that we got a different answer from him.
Well, this is the part that's a little tricky,
right.
Is that there's a development agreement associated with it and a concept plan, which is really almost so detailed as that to almost probably detrimental to the applicant in the sense that it might lock in, it might require amendments to do other things in the property.
I have a question. You said a concept plan. It didn't trigger for me. Staff, can you answer, is the concept plan that we were presented that shows all the offsets, is that binding? Will that be part of the development agreement? It is?
It's Exhibit B.
Right.
Page 9 and 10 of the agreement.
And did that have heights listed on those buildings? Because that was a concern that I had, that everything in this area appears to be Rambler. But once you've subdivided it, they'll be allowed to...
So heights were not listed in that exhibit, but the height limit is the same as it is under the R1.8 zone for for residential principal buildings on the lots.
Which is 35 feet, is that correct?
Right.
Are there any buildings on that street, though, that are two stories tall?
Yes. Not sure.
Yes?
Yes.
I needed an answer from staff, I'm sorry.
From what I hear in the audience, yes, because I haven't seen it in person.
We can't admit that, Greg.
Whether or not, it actually doesn't matter because 35 feet is the limit on that street. If one of the Ramblers wanted to rebuild tomorrow and said, I want to go 40, we'd say, no, we'll go 35. 35 is the rule, and so whether... Yeah, I get what you're saying because you kind of have a character of that part of the neighborhood, but... Anybody could rebuild their one
their
lot and make it a 35 foot right up to the
I was
inch.
Thinking of it from a guest house perspective your primary dwelling limits you, but you're right, they could rebuild.
A guest house is different because...
You're matching.
This is a new lot. You just nailed it.
But I guess the point I was making is, could they, instead of making a flag lot, go the approach of a guest house? So, okay.
Maybe. And also, if that's something you want to recommend, that the flag lot houses are no taller than the houses in front, recommend to the city council, they can put it into the agreement if they want. That is, this is legislative. You can you can do what you think feels and is best as long as it's not arbitrary, capricious, or illegal. And going to the example we have of ADUs and guest house, or we match heights, it's clearly not arbitrary, capricious, or illegal to recommend it. You have precedent.
Do you have any easy way to look at the properties adjacent and tell me how tall they are?
Google Maps?
Yeah, I've been looking, but I can't tell. All right.
So maybe one thing, like going after what Mr. Luce just said, if we wanted to make that recommendation on height, then maybe we don't have an actual footage, but we give a percentage not to exceed a certain, like 10% of the, you know, or primary whatever that structure. Might be. Yeah.
Those are small primary structures, though. I have a feeling these homes will be bigger. But the offsets, I feel like, are really reasonable. They're very far into the property. I'm willing to stop going down that path just because of where they're positioned. All right. Commissioners, I do always hesitate to change the characteristic of a community like this. It's beautiful. Lots like these are so rare. But I do feel like this one looks like it's been conscientious with the placement of the homes and with doing two together with a single driveway instead of the really narrow, some of them that we see. So I think I'm inclined to support this one as well. Mr. Bishop, you're up now.
Okay. My family background is kind of rural, and that's, as I'm picturing this neighborhood and what they've got planned, I think it's compatible.
All right, commissioners, are we ready for a motion then?
So maybe I should ask the questions of
ask some questions.
Yeah, just so Mr. Luce, so on the subdivision one, and sorry, I don't have prepared for the next item yet. Is the standard of review on that inclusive of the flag lot Title 16 requirements?
I'd have to look into that more. I kind of said earlier I thought that one was premature because we generally do not get those. Uh-huh. Mr. Gedge said that, and I'd be inclined to recommend the same as Mr. Gedge, that you postpone that. One, so I don't want anything we say here rendered moot by what the council does if they choose not to impose right. zone.
For sure.
And so I don't want to start making representation stuff that get everybody thinking one way when we still have a legislative item before council, but I'd be happy to discuss that with you offline.
Okay. Yeah, I could do the other research. That the information I received tonight made me rethink the sequence. And all that.
I think it's worth talking about. I just don't want to have a conversation, and then in 2 weeks, a month, or whenever it comes back, and they say, "Well, it was this," and what if the council imposes something that changes how we discuss it? Like, if they put something in the development agreement, that development agreement would override the Title 16. Mm-hmm. And without knowing what they're going to do, anything we make a commitment on tonight, or it feels like a commitment, it would be rendered moot. So I want to be very careful there. Let's let them do their job, then we can do ours.
Okay. And then, so the way I was reading that is, what we have today, if we approve the action, the current item, is we still have two parcels, or two lots, and they're just rezoned with
if you recommend approval of the rezone, uh-huh. then it'll go to council, and if they rezone it, then it will allow the next item to come back if you table the next item, right. or if you approve the next item, then I guess it would conditionally, if it's rezoned. We have a lot of ifs in there because you also have the if of the development agreement. And so I'd recommend tabling the next item and just saying, do you think zoning-wise, four lots make sense here?
Gotcha.
Two lots in addition to the two they have. If that makes sense to you, and on that concept plan and with that agreement, because Planning Commission now reviews every development agreement, which is a state law change about 2 years ago, not last session, but the one before. And so from that standpoint, if all that makes sense to you, what's in your packet on this item, as far as rezone goes, not bringing in the list of rules, and I'm like you, I'm a rules guy, I love the rules. But right now we're playing with that does it make sense level. If it makes sense, then you'd recommend approval. If concerns like height are there, then you'd recommend approval, but look at height or whatever your things are, and then the council has to make a decision.
So normally this would only be a subdivision because we would normally be able to subdivide, but because of the lot area, and then
exactly,
and unfortunately it's not as just as simple as that, because as soon as it becomes the rezone, then the floating zone, it comes the developer's agreement and all that goes with that,
exactly,
and the complexities, and that's where I got lost.
Okay, we have made our own process confusing by having an administrative process for flag lots, and then if that doesn't work, we have a legislative process for flag lots where the council has some control over it but can help certain properties be rezoned. But it's not just administrative. If you follow the rules, you get it. The council can weigh the fit of the neighborhood and character, those things, and they take your recommendation on all those to weigh that. So we have these two funny processes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, if there's no further discussion, or we can have discussion, I would like to make a motion, please. So feel free to discuss my motion. But based on the staff report and the comments given this evening in our discussion, I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council that they approve the following. Resolution R2024-42, approving the Wheaton Acres Subdivision Amendment Flag Lot Overlay Development Agreement, and Ordinance Number 2024-08-Z, approving the zone change from Single Family Residential R-1.8 to Single Family Residential R-1.8 with the Flag Lot Overlay Zone for Lots 14 and 15A of the Wheaton Acres Subdivision.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there any discussion on that motion?
The only discussion is, did we want to make any changes to the development agreement? I didn't personally see any, but I think City Council, I think they say they review our minutes, and staff could all probably also pass on, or we can email them. Just maybe our concerns about height, setback, on all those separately.
I think that's appropriate and probably more likely to get on their radar.
Yeah.
With that, I'm ready to, I'll second Mr. Gedge's motion. Ms. Crookston.
Commissioner Gedge.
Aye.
Commissioner Hollist.
Yes.
Commissioner Bishop.
Yes.
Commissioner Catmull.
No.
Okay, so we will forward a recommendation to City Council of 3 in favor and 1 opposed. Commissioner Catmull, would you like to add anything to your vote?
Just that I voted no because I'm thinking about the rest of the zone, how it can develop, and the circulation of the streets. And I see a potential for a proliferation of flag lots in that area to fill out that subdivision to its capacity, and that's why I voted no.
Okay, thank you. So again, as a clarification, this is only a recommending body, so on this particular item, our recommendation will be sent to City Council, and they will hear this item at a future meeting. Does staff know when that meeting is?
Not yet.
Not yet. However, anyone who was noticed for this item will be noticed when City Council right. hears
I will be sending out notices for the correct or the updated date for that
okay.
City Council meeting.
And then can you just, for public record, since we've got as much participation as we do today, explain who gets noticed?
So for this, it is everybody in the subdivision and adjacent properties according to the Flag Lot Overlay Zone code.
Is that 300 feet?
So it says notices shall include property owners within the subdivision and adjacent to the subject property.
Okay.
I typically also notice within 300 feet as well. So I include the subdivision and 300 feet.
Okay.
That's what I did for this one.
And also posted to the state public notice website, which is a great reference for anyone listening to check for anything that you might not be, if you're just slightly outside of that distance. Want to plug that.
All right. Okay, we're now going to switch gears and go into our administrative item for this evening. This body under administrative is the final decider. So on these items, we will make decisions, and then City Council does not take any further action. We are the final body that hears those. And so we do have an item, and Miguel will present our staff report unless there is a motion ahead of that.
Yeah, I want to potentially make a motion because if the development agreement changes, and that changes our standard of what we're reviewing. And so I think it's appropriate this time to table this item. That way we can have a more thorough public discussion as well with what's actually been approved by or not approved by the City Council. Just because if things do change, what we are considering as the administrative body at that point. So I think it's premature at this point to have a public hearing for is this a subdivision amendment? Mm-hmm. At this point, but that's just my feeling, so I'm only one of four.
And Commissioner Gedge, I agree, but I'm going to turn to legal and see if Mr. Luce has any advice as far as do we need to at least hold a public hearing? Can we table it prior to that?
You can table it prior to that. The one thing about public hearing, if you want to hold it, that is great. I would just say that, as Mr. Gedge stated, if things change, we'll probably recommend you hold another public hearing second time anyway, because what we want to do is let the public talk about what the zone actually allows. Since the zone isn't in place, we're speculating on that the zone will be in place. But if you would like to hear from the public, certainly you can hold it. It's been noticed that there's no harm in that either way.
I know a lot of the public has left. I'm inclined to have a discussion and potentially a motion to open public comment to collect any concerns that people have on this item, knowing that we might potentially table it. We maybe should table it first and then...
Would it be appropriate just to table an item and then have a discussion on an item that we've then tabled?
This is the problem. Because yeah. What if we don't table it?
I would have your vote. If you're going to table it, and then... And the meeting, if you're going to hold a public hearing, have the public hearing, then table it. Once you voted to table, you've ended the item.
Okay.
So you shouldn't discuss it more after. It's just like once you voted to approve, you shouldn't rehash it if you've voted not to approve. Once that vote's done, then the item's done for tonight.
So I'm not going to make the motion, but I'm going to float the idea that we potentially motion to open public comment for any concerns related to a subdivision amendment on these properties.
But before we have that public comment, don't we need to follow our normal process and have the staff report?
You don't need a motion for public comment, Chair. You can follow your normal process unless someone moves to table and you get a second, which would interrupt the normal process. I would suggest you just follow the normal process, which is hear the staff report, hear the any public comment. Mr. Gedge said he would be inclined to move to table it, but he didn't make the motion.
It's true. Okay, Mr. Gedge, I'm going to give you 10 seconds, and then we'll proceed.
Well, I'm just thinking, just because the staff report, if things change at the next level, they have to give us a whole new staff report. That's just my
No, I completely agree. So if you have a motion.
I move the table item. Sorry, I don't have my glasses on. Sorry, you only gave me 10 seconds. I'm scrambling.
I'm sorry. I'll give you that 10 more.
The table item I.1, the Whedon Acres lots 14 and 15A subdivision amendment to a date after City Council has adjudicated the legislative public hearing H.1 that we just heard.
Okay. We have a motion. I'm in support of that motion without any further discussion. Is there anything either of you would like to say? Okay, I will second that motion. All in favor of tabling this item until after City Council has heard the flag lot overlay rezone, please indicate. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we're going to table this item, and we will see it at a future date, assuming City Council approves the flag lot overlay rezone. To those that joined us this evening to provide input, we appreciate that. We thank you for your input. And Mr. Myler, we always appreciate when our applicants are present. It always helps when we have you available to answer questions. So we hope to see you at a future meeting soon.
Madam Chair, would you like to invite Commissioner Bevins back to the dais? Or not, either way, but...
Yeah. Ms. Bevins, would you like to rejoin us? Thank you for remembering. All right, we did have a couple of things we wanted to discuss. Mr. Gedge, I'll let you go first. I think you had, no, maybe it was Ms. Bevins.
It's Ms. Bevins.
Okay. No, he didn't have something.
It was your item with your blue piece of paper.
With my
I will put this in the public record just so that I'm not breaking rules, but I attended a planning commission meeting up in North Logan last week, and just we've been discussing our rules of order and how we're going to run things, and so they had some interesting things how they run them. I had their city planning director send me the paper of the what they read before public comment happens, kind of just outlining some rules and how they run the meeting. So I thought this would be good for us to discuss when we start talking about how we're going to finalize our rules and order.
Can you send a picture to everybody?
And yeah, then so I have it. I will scan this in and send it to you, Anna, or I can just give it to you. I don't need it. And then I do have the actual, like, what they read. He sent it to my city email, so I'll just forward that to you as well so that it's there and we can all have it and discuss it.
Okay. And then I know that Mr. Catmull has sent us some emails as well with some additional recommendations. Do you know what our next meeting's looking like, Mr.
Yes, Schindler? There's right now there's three items three. On the agenda. There are three subdivisions.
So. Those aren't too bad. Can we potentially have an item next week after those are discussed to have a discussion about our rules and how we
So for January 2025, it'd be good to
have something in place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will you make that an other business item, just discussion of rules for 2025?
And I did actually have an item. Sorry, I just remembered. So after our joint training with City Council last week, I've just forwarded you all the discussion that they had regarding, I brought it. Just short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. And I know this was after the City Council had to adjourn for their regular meeting, but a couple of them, the council members did ask. I put in the email that we just review this and maybe send them personally our representative who appointed us. Just recommend how we feel about that. They wanted our input. They may not do anything with that input, but.
Can I see that? I have a question about
that. Did you guys all get a copy of the presentation and matrix if they're asking you?
Commissioner Gedge emailed it to us.
Okay, as you can see, I could do that too.
I was reading in here. Hold on, let me find it. So when it's an ADU, in order to rent it out, if it's an internal ADU, the main portion of the home has to be owner-occupied. But then I was reading something about, in the code, how if it's an external ADU, that doesn't apply?
So these are two different things. What okay. they were talking about are short-term rentals, not yes. ADUs.
Yeah, sorry, I meant short-term rentals. Yeah.
So in short-term rentals, right now, we don't regulate them really at all. We just haven't had problems in the last few years, and so now we're looking at how to regulate them. And short-term rentals, there are people who short-term rental their couch. And so you have the gambit from that to, like, a guest house, right? So you can kind of think of the whole scale. There are people who short-term their whole house, and they just have it on the weekends, and they don't rent it out like others do. Others will rent it out monthly to someone for several years, and some people short-term it because they can make more money. And so you kind of have a big gambit in short-term. In one of the options, there's a matrix sheet with different mm-hmm. options. One of the options is to require the owner or an agent, and the reason I say agent is there's case law developing, I think, in the Fifth Circuit, one of the circuits in the Midwest, saying that you can't require it always to be the owner because it has to do with a commerce clause. Anyway, but you can make an agent live there. A lot of the short-term rental companies advertise, like I think it's VRBO or one of them advertise, the owner won't be there. Well, they probably wouldn't advertise homes if we required an owner or an agent to live in the home. Anyway, that's an option, or be within an hour or two. There's kind of the sliding scale if you look at the matrix. And so that is short-term. ADUs, state law allows us to require owner-occupied, and we do for both, internal and external ADUs. Different than short-term. So if you have a short-term that you haven't done as an ADU, meaning it's not an ADU under our code, it's a short term, then, and remember, you're not allowed to short-term your ADOs under a current code. So if you have an ADO under your current code, a legal one, and you short-term it, you lose your ADU.
But if it's an external ADU, you can short-term it? Because I was,
this I don't is think I you can short-term your external one under our current code.
Okay, because that's what I was confused about. Yeah. I misspoke earlier. It was in the facts, the FAQs. It says homeowners are allowed to operate short-term rentals out of condos, townhomes, single-family houses, and guest houses with an approved ADU permit. Basement apartments are not allowed to be short-term rentals.
Yeah, we might have got that confused. I had Charity doing it, and maybe we didn't hit that. My understanding is you can't short-term rental any ADU in the city, whether okay. it's a guest house or not.
Because that Greg, was my understanding, and then this confused
that,
me.
That's correct. It's yeah. not, it's
so we missed on that. I okay. apologize.
Okay, that answers my question.
The rental has to be at least 30 days, which is beyond
a short-term. The key is that kind of we got to pull ourselves out of the ADU thought, though, because yeah. short-term, we're going to regulate like business licenses most likely. Or that's one of our proposals. And fire inspection stuff, whereas ADUs, we don't regulate like a business.
Sure. Okay. Is that on the city website, though? If someone were to go on our city website and
should
look
be
it
in
up.
The minutes from the last meeting, the unapproved minutes, and which would mean it would be posted.
Because it looks like it's on the city webpage. Yeah. FAQs. So yeah, that is be. On there?
Oh, the FAQs?
Yeah, because that's what I just read. It's in the FAQs. So I'm wondering if it says that on the city website.
That you can't, that's under the ADU section, that you cannot rent the guest house.
So this says, does the city allow short-term rentals Airbnb? And this is where it says that guest houses with an approved ADU permit.
Oh, we'll correct that. So it was the city website one. I'm not sure who put that on there and when they did that. We just pulled it off. Someone in my office did when we made the slides. We'll correct that.
Okay. Because that would be my only concern if that's on the website and we're
We'll fix that. Since right now there's no restrictions on short term, we're gonna have to change some of the code anyway, so we'll align okay. all that.
Okay.
And I think I only read in our code maybe that they have to keep a guest log. Short term rentals have to keep a guest log and record the driver's license.
In our current code?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
We have that if you rent four or more units. But I don't know if it's for short terms.
I know what you're talking about, but I think I don't know. We
should yeah, I'll double check
that too when you're double checking.
Because we just haven't been regulating short term rentals at all. We regulate the ones require, and you'll find this under business licensing, is if they have four or more units in the city. So if you run out, if you have four houses, or that came up a few weeks ago when right. we had the ADU thing,
right.
or if you have a reasonable accommodation, or even if you don't, but it for a help me remember term, Greg. It's a residential facility, a residential treatment
seniors.
Facility,
yeah.
whether it's seniors or rehab or anything like that. That's where they have to keep a guest log, and maybe you were reading there.
It just
if you see it, tell me. But we don't regulate short term at all. We don't,
right, I'm just saying.
We don't mention it. And so the guest log would be, I believe, in fact, I know if you have like a sober living home or something, you have to keep a guest log. We will check on it and stuff. I'm wondering if that's where you're at. Because we don't have any other short-term regulations. We don't regulate short-term rentals.
I'll find it. I'm building a topic on short-term rentals. And so it'd be good to get it right, whatever it is. So thank you.
For what intent?
What? I don't like intent either. I don't like intent.
No. What are you making this?
What?
You said you're putting together a...
Oh, short-term rental thing. Like I skimmed and watched a goodly portion of Dallas City's controversial meeting on the matter, and it is enlightening.
Dallas,
it is a
huh?
topic. Yeah. And I've,
Should we watch this for training?
You certainly could.
Next year, we already got our hours.
Okay.
You certainly could. It was interesting, and it was interesting how much was similar problems,
mm-hmm.
and their size is 1.3 million.
So Anna found it under 564, and it's really talking about like hotels and stuff, but it does mention short term.
Yeah.
But it's talking about overnight stay things. That must have been in there a long, long time, because we just purposely haven't been doing it, and I don't know how we'd enforce it because we're not requiring them to get a license.
Right. Like, I mentioned that because I saw that there when I was building out my stuff. Do we collect tourist tax or on short-term rentals or on hotels?
No. Hotels, I don't think we're a qualifying city. We're not a tourism city. I'd have to look. I don't believe. There's a room tax thing that's specific.
Tax, so that's only county level then?
No, there's a specific room tax for like Moab and different tourist-centered cities that they're allowed to impose. Okay. I don't believe we're allowed to.
And with the new Glenmore development we saw last year or earlier this year, that doesn't change that with once that's finished?
No.
The new hotel coming there?
No. Well, the hotels pay their property tax, so they pay that. But there's a special tax that certain cities that are tourist cities get to charge, if I'm remembering right, and I'm not the tax expert.
So with a certain professional sports team coming to our community in 2025,
I don't know that the bees is, I don't think that's going to make us a Moab.
Okay. I'm just trying. Hey, you know.
Commissioners, anything else this evening?
Yes, I did have a question about ADUs, actually. I'm sorry. But I was studying our training materials and our previous meeting minutes and stuff. And so the floating zone versus overlay zone, right? I wasn't here for that discussion, but it sounds like when a floating zone is applied that the city council has to be involved. Did I understand that correctly?
Let me restate the question. The floating zones.
Yes.
If someone wants the residential chicken floating zone and their property complies with the parameters of the zone and it's not already applied to their property, then they would have to apply to get it. If someone previously had applied for that, or if, like we've done with some of the other zones, we've just said, we're going to apply it to everything that applies within the R18 zone. We're going to just set the chicken zone on top of it so an individual property owner doesn't have to come in. It just depends on if the city has put it on that property or not previously.
Okay.
And if they haven't, then the individual can ask for it.
So similar to my question earlier today on the animal overlay zone, which I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which my understanding is that they have put that over all the agriculturals and R18 zones.
Okay. Because the reason,
that was done at the time the zone was created, and they said, okay, we create it, and now we apply it.
Okay. Because, yeah, the reason I was asking was, as I was reading about ADUs later and went into the code, I found that it looks like ADUs are regulated under a floating zone, which made me wonder why anybody that wants an ADU isn't coming in and seeing the city council. Does that mean it's been applied everywhere?
It has been applied, but city council recently applied it to, you know, so the exterior, you know, the ADUs that are exterior ADUs, the detached ones, they applied it now. It was only applied to the A1, A5, and R18 zones, and now it's applied the R25 zones that have a large enough lot and so forth. So they did that by, you know, passing that ordinance. So
okay. Okay, that was all. Yeah, thank you.
Good question. That's a question.
Madam Chair, if there's something else, I made a motion to adjourn.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, any opposed? Okay.
Sorry, so I gave you
thank you.
No?